सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Bringing Ishvara into our lives. Ishvara means God. And Bhagavad Gita gives a simple definition of who Ishvara is, God is. In the 18th chapter, it is said, Yatah pravrittir bhutanam yen sarvamidam tatam. Yatah pravrittir bhutanam, yatah means from whom. Bhutanam, of all the beings. Pravritti, activity. All the creation. One from whom is the creation of all the beings. One from whom is the activity of all the beings. One who is the source or the origin of this universe. And one, because of whom the universe is dynamic, we see constantly the activity and movement in the universe. So one, because of whom there is dynamism, activity, movement, liveliness in the universe. Yena sarvamidam tadam, by whom the whole universe is pervaded. This is the, in one line, Lord Krishna explains who God is. So what's the concept of God that Vedas show us? All traditions of the world do give us the concept of God. And the usual concept is that God is the creator of the universe. Everybody says God created the universe. There may be different descriptions of how God created. But other than that, one thing is very clear, that God created the universe. God sustains the universe. God governs the universe. God ordains the universe. They explain G-O-D. G stands for generation. O stands for ordaining. D stands for destruction. Meaning one who has created the universe, one who sustains the universe, one who destroys the universe. So everybody accepts that this universe is created. All the religious traditions accept. Science may not accept that God, that universe is created by somebody. Science may say that the universe is the outcome of evolution, of natural selection. An organism itself makes choices, selects and evolves, and that's how the universes evolve on its own. So whether the universes evolve on its own or whether the universe evolves according to an intelligent plan is a debate that is going on between science and the religious people. Science cannot accept something that you cannot demonstrate. You cannot demonstrate a God that is beyond this universe. They say God is in the heaven. So God in the heaven created this universe. What is heaven? Something that you cannot see, something you cannot experience, something you cannot verify. As long as you are in this world, as long as you are in this body, you cannot see God, you cannot experience God, you cannot verify God, you cannot demonstrate God. It remains a matter of faith. God, who is in the heaven, who created the universe, is a matter of faith. Therefore, many religions are called faiths. So this is how God is presented by most of the theologies. Which is fine. That concept also takes us quite a long way, if not all the way. Yatah pravrittir bhutanam, as Bhagavad Gita says, one from whom is the origin of the universe, one from whom is all the activity of the universe, meaning one who creates the universe, one who sustains the universe. Now you imagine that one who also resolves the universe is Ishvara. Bringing Ishvara suggests that into our life. One thing is that for creating something, you must have the knowledge of what it is that you want to create. You also must have the skills of how to create. Like a pot maker must have the knowledge of what a pot is, how to create the pot. He must have the skills to create the pot. And things may appear very easy or simple, but they are not. Even making a pot also is not a simple thing at all. Until I tried it, I did not know. Our Gurukulam, we have a children's program, and we have one of the teachers who wants to demonstrate. He is an art and craft teacher. So he used to demonstrate to the children how things are created. So he would bring one pot making, you know, machine and bring some clay, and then you would demonstrate to the children how you make a lump of clay, you put it on that, on the wheel, potter's wheel, turn the wheel and then give a shape to the pot. He used to demonstrate. So while this was going on, while in art and craft class, I just happened to pass by one day. The teacher saw me, saw the Swami. He says to the children, "Hey children, oh, let us call Swamiji here. See, Swami will demonstrate to you now how a pot is made." I was a bit scared, I was very apprehensive, because I had never touched anything like that. But he put me on the spot, So Swami, he demonstrated to me how you take a lump of clay and then how you shape it like this. And look, very simple in his hands. So when he gave me a lump of clay, and then when I placed it on the potter's wheel, I tried to give it a shape, then it just bulged this way. So Swami, you push it here, you know, press here, bulged that way. I struggled for several minutes and the pot bulged in different ways. And what turned out was a very funny looking thing which I don't know what name you can give. He says, we'll put this on the bulletin board, this is Swami's creation, you know. So please don't do that. Meaning that even to make something as simple as a pot, you need the knowledge, you need the skill. Otherwise you cannot create. Sometimes we have the knowledge, we don't have the skill. So, when I came first to the United States, in those days there were no Indian stores, there was no Indian groceries, nothing. So then they had given me a cooker and then, you know, told me how to make khichdi, how much water should be there, how much rice, how much dal, they used to measure. And then put it on the stove and then three whistles. So I did that. Except that when it started whistling, not only the steam started coming out, even the rice started coming out. I have never seen this kind of phenomenon. You may not have seen it. Maybe it's fine, you find it difficult to believe. But that's exactly what happened. So even to make something as simple as khichdi also is not easy unless you have the right kind of skills. Just to create anything, to make even a sweater, to stitch a cloth. I remember our sisters used to go to the classes to learn how to stitch. They would go and then the teacher would show them how to make a shirt and how to make, do this and whatever. And in her great enthusiasm, she would make a shirt for her brother, younger brother. With all enthusiasm, she would come back and say, come on, I made a shirt for you. Try it. She had taken my measurements and things like that. I put on the shirt, I was looking for a pocket. So pocket going in, there was coming out, you know. So to make a shirt, to make a sweater, nothing is easy. You must have knowledge, you must have the skills. Though I learned hardly, making chapati, take this flour, add this much water, and mix them properly, then roll them. So take some flour, put some water, too much water, put a little flour, too much flour, put some water, too much water. Before I realized, I had a huge, you know, amount of the dough. Then you take some little, you know, roll from that, ball from that, tadur roll. Sometimes Ceylon, sometimes all kinds of maps used to come out, but certainly not anything circular. And then by the time you roll, you find that in the center it becomes very thin and then it splits. On the edges it is very thick. You try to bake that, it gets burnt in the center, remains uncooked at the edges, you know, very funny things. Used to complain all kinds of things, you know, when others used to cook. Now I realize how difficult it is. how making anything is not easy. Unless you have the knowledge and you have the skill. So one thing is certain, that the one who has created the universe must have the knowledge. In Sanskrit they would say, ghatasya karta ghatagnya. Ghatasya karta, the creator of ghata means a pot. The creator of pot, ghatagnya, must have the knowledge of the pot. Ghatagnya, gnya means the knower. Ghata means a pot. Ghatagnya, the knower of the pot. The creator of the pot must have the knowledge of the pot. Patakarta, patagnya. Pata means the cloth. The creator of the cloth must have the knowledge of the cloth. Mathakarta, mathagnya. The one who has created the hall must have the knowledge of the hall. So in extended logic, we can say, sarvasya karta, sarvagnya. One who has created all must have the knowledge of all. So Ishvara or God, who has created this whole universe, must have the knowledge of the whole universe. It's important. He must be sarvajnaha. He must be all-knowing. He must be omniscient. It's most amazing how the omniscience, that creator is omniscient, is all-knowing, becomes evident when we look anywhere. Somebody drew my attention, Swamiji, look at your thumbprint. It just demonstrates how the creator is omniscient. He must have knowledge of the past, present and future. The one who has created a thumbprint must have the knowledge of the past, present and future. You know how? This thumbprint is a unique thumbprint. When we enter these days, you know, the country, pass through immigration, they take your fingerprints and thumbprints. And they have a whole data bank in which they store all this. So someday, if I make a mischief, then they'll catch me. Meaning that they're quite sure that these prints are unique. This thumbprint or the fingerprints, they belong only to this particular person and not to anybody else. Because the same thumbprint also belong to someone else, then they cannot identify me, because then there is no evidence, clinching evidence that this person alone did something. It must be a unique print, is it not so? You know what it means? It means that right now in the present, nobody in the world has this thumbprint. There are 7 billion people in the universe, and nobody other than this person has this thumbprint. Not only in the present, in the past also, nobody had this thumbprint, because otherwise, in the data bank that they have, they have been storing this thumbprint for many years. If someone had a thumbprint like this in the past, then they cannot identify only one person. Further, nobody will have this thumbprint in the future also. It must be a unique thumbprint which is not possessed by anybody in the present, was not possessed by anybody in the past, will not be possessed by anybody in future. Is it not so? Otherwise, no point in storing these thumbprints. So what does it mean? It means that one who has created this thumbprint must have known all the thumbprints of the past, from the time beginning, must have known all the thumbprints that exist in the present of all human beings, must also know all the thumbprints that will come in future of all the human beings in future also. Is it not so? So if one thumbprint also demonstrates what? Demonstrates on the part of the creator thumbprint, the knowledge of the past, the present and the future. That is called all-knowing. So everything in the universe is unique. No two leaves of a tree also are identical. Nothing that the nature creates is identical. Even though on the surface, at the outset, two things may look similar, but when we examine them in all details, we find that each thing is different from the other. Everything is unique. Our Swami used to say, you are unique. Everything is unique. And therefore, the one who has created everything that is unique must know all the leaves in the whole universe so that this leaf is not like any other leaf and whatever. So that's how the creation is the result of a creator who is all-knowing, who is omniscient. The creator of all must have the knowledge of all. He must be sarvajna. Secondly, the one who creates and one who rules. In Sanskrit, the word for God is Ishvara. Therefore, we said bringing Ishvara into our life. Our Swamiji used to prefer the word Ishvara instead of the word God. Because the word God already has so many connotations, everybody has an idea of what God is. And therefore, when we use the word God, they will automatically interpret the word in the manner in which they are accustomed to think of it. Therefore, use the word Ishvara. Because people don't know much about Ishvara, or they don't have any delusions, confusions, wrong notions about Ishvara. Ishvara. That word is derived from the root Ish, to which you apply the varat pratyaya, varash pratyaya. Ish plus vara becomes Ishvara. Ish means to rule. And vara, varash means what? One whose nature it is. So Ishvara means the one whose nature it is to rule. So Ishvara means a ruler. How can you rule something? Or when can you rule something? You can rule something or somebody provided you have the knowledge of what you're going to rule as well as the power to rule, understand? For ruling something also you require, for ruling or controlling something, you require both the knowledge as well as power. If you don't know the power, then you cannot rule. We cannot even rule our teenage children. Why teenage children? Even little children. You can't control them. You cannot rule them. The little four-year-old one, once we were all assembled in a big room, and this little child was watching TV. So many people are gathered, so I requested him, will you please turn on the TV? So 4-year-old child asked me, do I have to? 4-year-old, do I have to? Meaning that if he does not wish, he will not switch off, turn off the TV. So I cannot even control a 4-year-old child, let alone anybody else. What to talk of teenager? Impossible. And what to talk of the grown-up people? Not that we should control. I'm not suggesting we should control. What I'm saying is, how difficult it is to control. Lots of our difficulties in our life arise on account of our attempt to control others. There seems to be a need on the part of the human being to control. There seems to be a need on my part that I should be in charge of everything. I can feel comfortable only when I'm in control. I'm not comfortable if I'm not in. There are some people take control over things. As soon as they go into a situation, take control over the things. They start ordering, they start instructing. So this need to control. So there's a control freak, wants to control everything. Understand that we cannot control anything. We cannot control anything because to control something requires a total knowledge of what I'm going to control. And the power to control. I must know how this clock is going to behave. I must have power to control its behavior. We don't have that. Neither do we have any knowledge, nor do we have any power. Is it not so? And I said, I could not control that clay, I could not control that pot, and I tried to create a pot, and some very funny thing came out, so I can't control. So Ishvara means the ruler. The ruler must necessarily have the power to rule, as well as the knowledge of what he's going to rule. Ishvara is the ruler of the whole universe. It means that he must have the knowledge of everything in the universe. How even an atom also behaves, beginning from a subatomic particle to huge galaxies, whatever things there are in the universe. Ishvara, the ruler, must have the knowledge of that behavior in and out, and also the power to rule them. Ishvara. So he is not only omniscient, all-knowing, he must be omnipotent, all-powerful. Another thing is, that he must be a ruler who is not ruled by anybody else, understand? Ishvara must be the ruler who himself is not ruled by anybody else. He is the ruler. You follow? If he is ruled by somebody else, then that becomes the Ishvara ruler, isn't it? Although we find that every ruler also is ruled. When those dictators, you know, we thought are independent and they can do anything they want. Do you think that they are really independent? A dictator who has sway, a big godfather, whoever it is, you know, a mafia who can control his family. Do you think that person is really independent? Do you think that he is not ruled by anything? Even that person also is ruled by something. You know by whom? Even a mafia who may be the boss, even a dictator who has a sway over the entire country, also is ruled by something. You know by what? By his own impulses, his own likes and dislikes, his own anger, his own greed, his own needs, the need to control, the need for power, the greed for power. Is it not so? That's how the rulers also are destroyed in course of time. So the rulers that we have, even the most powerful rulers in the universe, whether it may be Alexander, it may be Napoleon, whoever they may be, none of them were the rulers. They were also ruled by something. Maybe ruled by his girlfriend, who knows? Or if not by anybody, maybe ruled by his own impulse, his own greed, his own jealousies, his own anger, his own passions. Therefore, this ruler must be what kind of ruler? Who is not ruled by anybody? Ishvara must be the ruler who is ruled not only by anything outside of himself, but also not ruled by anything within himself. Then only he can be called ruler, isn't it? Otherwise you can manipulate the person. However powerful a person is, you can always manipulate that person. In the olden days, our Swami used to tell us, in the new office, when a new recruit comes, then the senior people indoctrinate him, teach him. So, when this person was recruited, the seniors were there working for several years, told him, look, the boss is a very angry man. Be careful. Avoid raising a given topic. If you talk about a given topic, this fellow will get excited, he'll get angry, so avoid that. And then say, do you want to see? The senior people will tell this fellow, do you want to see? Come on, let's go to the boss. They'll take him to the boss and deliberately raise the topic. And the fellow will get excited. See that? So then, when we are subject to being ruled by our impulses, such as anger, such as greed, such as passion, such as jealousy, it's very easy to control. You know Ravana, the hydra-headed demon, Ravana, the most powerful man in the universe, person in the universe, he also could be controlled by his passion. That he could not control his passion and therefore he kidnapped Sita. Once sage Narada comes to Ravana and praises Ravana and says, this is sage Narada's style. There is nobody in the universe like you. You are the most powerful one. Ravana says, yes, there is nobody like me. Then sage Narada says, but you know something? Recently I am just coming from the kingdom of Kishkindha. Kishkindha is the nation of monkeys, and the king of Kishkindha is Vali. And recently I was visiting Kishkindha and I met with Vali. And you know, I told Vali about you, Ravana. I said, Ravana is the most powerful one in the universe, there's nobody like him. Vali says, what? I can just crush Ravana like that, like a mosquito. That's what Vali told about you. You know, that's what Sayyid Narada says to Ravana. That's it. Ravana's jealousy, you know, immediately was invoked. I'll go and, you know, take care of him. So then Ravana goes to where Vali is. In the early morning he reaches the palace of Vali and asks the gatekeepers, I want to see Vali. Where is he? Vali is the devotee of Lord Surya Sun. Early morning he goes to the ocean and prays to the sun for a long time. So if you want to meet with him, you have to go there. It's all right. Take me there. He was taken there. Where is Vali? So you see that hillock there? Hillock, big hill. Yeah, that's Vali. Wow! Ravana was scared, you know. He didn't want to go. This is Vali, huge. Yes, yes, yes. So then that fellow said, you know, the gatekeeper, come on, let us go there, don't worry. Goes there. Vali is huge. Ravana is, you know, a little Lilliput before Vali. And Vali is very busy in his prayer. He did not even notice Ravana coming there. So Ravana tried to draw his attention. Hey Vali! He screamed. Hey Vali! He would not listen. And Ravana started, you know, punching him in his legs. No effect. Then Ravana started with his 10 mouths, with his teeth. He's, you know, so he started injuring Vali's feet with his teeth. And then Vali felt a little bit. He picked up something. He picked up Ravana and put it here. And then again was in prayer. So this is what happens. So even though Ravana may be all powerful, also can be controlled by his greed, his jealousies. Understand that nobody in the universe is really independent. At least no ignorant person is independent, put it this way. As far as the wise person is concerned, he is independent. Not independent in terms of he is all powerful and he can control, no. But the wise person is the one who is not controlled by his impulses. He is free from all impulses. Wise person is free from all passions. Lord Krishna describes a wise person. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. He partha, he Arjuna. When this person has given up all the kamas, all the desires, all the passions, when he has become free from all the passions, all the needs, all the demands, when he become free from all the needs, all the demands, all the passions, atmaneva atmana tushtah, because he is satisfied with himself, by himself. Because he has discovered a total satisfaction within his own self. Because he has discovered the fact that I am of the nature of ananda. I am of the nature of happiness. I am of the nature of fullness. So who can be free from passions? Who will be free from anger and greed and jealousy and demands? The one who has discovered wholeness or completeness within himself. Because when you see yourself as complete being, which you happen to be, which all of us happen to be, but we don't know that. Right now, that is not our experience. Our experience is that we are limited, incomplete beings, inadequate beings. And therefore we have many needs. We need many things. Basically, we need other people to love us. We need other people to accept us. We need the world to approve of us. We are constantly seeking love, acceptance, approval. That's constantly our attempt. Okay. Why is it so? Because we suffer from a sense of inadequacy, incompleteness within ourselves. So thus when there is inner inadequacy, inner incompleteness, when I am not satisfied with myself as I am, that's our problem. The problem of a human being is that he or she is not satisfied with the way he or she is. And therefore, there is constantly an attempt on my part to become different from what I am. Is it not so? Constantly, I am trying to become different from what I am. Happier than what I am. Stronger than what I am, more powerful than what I am, more famous than what I am. Because I am not happy or satisfied with the way I am right now. Thus, I am a needy person, in need of recognition, in need of attention, in need of approval, in need of power, and so forth and so on. So when I am needy, you can always manipulate me. By tempting me, you can manipulate me. Thus, everybody is subject to being manipulated, understand? However powerful a person may be in one sense, as long as that person is ignorant, so long the person is bound to feel a sense of incompleteness or inadequacy within himself or herself, and so long the person is dependent. He is ruled, understand? Ruled by his own needs, ruled by his own demands, arising from a sense of inadequacy, a sense of incompleteness. So Ishvara means ruler. A ruler who is not ruled by anybody else or anything else. He is all powerful. There is nobody as powerful as him. Therefore, he is not ruled by anybody more powerful than him. And they say knowledge also is power. Ishvara is all knowing. Therefore, as far as knowledge is concerned also, he is not ruled by anybody. At the same time, Ishvara, for being Ishvara, cannot be ruled by his own needs or expectations or demands. He cannot have any impulses, he cannot have any passions, he cannot have greed, he cannot have anger, he cannot have jealousy. He cannot have any demands, he cannot have any needs, understand? Because when I have needs or expectations or demands, then I am going to have likes and dislikes. See, when I am in need of something, need of attention, suppose I am sitting here, I want your attention. If I am in need of attention, then those who are attentive to me, listening to me with attention, listening to me with appreciation, not only attention, with a smile on the face, with an appreciation, how wonderful the Swami is talking, etc. Then I'm happy. Look at me like this. Who is this creature? What is he talking about? Or, while I am talking to you, you look up and count how many bulbs there are, how many ties there are. Meaning, you do not pay attention to me and pay attention to something else. I become unhappy, I feel hurt. So person who is needy is likely to get hurt, is likely to be partial. One is looking at me, smiling, appreciating. I like that person. The one who doesn't seem to care for me, I don't like that person. So a needy person is bound to have likes and dislikes. Understand this. All of us have likes and dislikes. We like those who promise to fulfill our needs. Whether they do it or not is a different matter. But at least there is a promise that this person or this thing will fulfill my need. Then becomes an object of my life. So whatever I look upon as a source of happiness, a source of security, a source of comfort, because I'm seeking happiness, I'm seeking security, I'm seeking comfort. So whatever I look upon as a source of happiness or security or comfort will become an object of my like. Basically I like happiness. Basically I like security. I like comfort. You become an object of my like because I look upon you as the source of my happiness or security or comfort. And somebody who comes in the way of that happiness or security or comfort becomes an object of dislike. A typical Indian movie with a triangle. He's one girl, and there is a hero, and then there is a villain. So he loves her, and this fellow also loves her. So you can have lots of fights. That's how the movie, you know, a lot of drama is there. As our Swami would describe, you know, Indian movies, there must be three. And then this fellow must go round, you know. The hero and heroine, they go round the tree and sing. And 26 people appear always, they all start dancing along with them. Where did they come from, partner? Anyway, that's a typical Indian movie. In between comes that villain with some kind of a gun, and then the fight starts. And so, this villain is the one who is an obstacle to fulfilling his needs and never becomes an object of dislike or hatred. So there is a fight. So when there is attachment or like, there is going to be an aversion or dislike. Therefore, all those who are ignorant, and there is hardly any exception, on account of ignorance, you feel a sense of incompleteness, inadequacy. Therefore, there is a need for being adequate, for happiness, for comfort, for security. Therefore, there are going to be always like, because the whole world cannot be favorable to me. Everybody will not favor me, everybody will not oblige me by giving me happiness. There are going to be people who will be opposite. Likes and dislikes are going to be there in a person who is feeling or suffering from a sense of inadequacy. Even the greatest ruler also is going to have likes and dislikes. Even Hitler will have likes and dislikes, isn't it? You can exploit that. Ishvara, who is a ruler? Who is, what sort of ruler? Ruler who is not ruled by anybody else. What is anybody else? Not ruled by something outside of himself, nor is ruled by something within himself. Which means that he must be free from all passions, all demands, all expectations, all needs. Then only he will not have likes and dislikes. Then only he will not have greed. Then only he will not have anger. Then only he will not have frustration. Is it right? Frustration is bound to be there when I am a needy person, because when my need is not satisfied, I become upset, angry, frustrated. When my need is satisfied, I become elated. Harsha and Shoka, elation and depression are the usual reactions which my mind goes through. Ishvara must be free from that, isn't it? Otherwise he can't be Ishvara. Otherwise Lakshmi Devi will manipulate him. Is it not so? People will manipulate him. Lord Krishna can be manipulated. He is of course posing. Please give me butter. I don't have butter, Gopi would say. Please give me some yogurt. I don't have yogurt. Please give me some buttermilk. Okay? First dance in front of me, then I'll see. So he dances for having a little buttermilk. That is called being controlled. Of course, this is what we call leela, a sport of the Lord, that he chooses to be controlled by his devotees. That's called love. There's no control in love. So that's a different thing. But then, Ishvara must necessarily be the one who is not controlled, who is ruler. Means what? He must be complete. He must abide in completeness, in ananda, in wholeness. So Upanishads tell us, ananda devakhal vimani bhutani jayante, anandena jatani jivanti, anandam priyante visamvishanti. Ananda devakhal vimani bhutani jayante. All the bhutani, all the beings are born of ananda. See, Upanishads tell us that this universe is a creation of ananda. It is happiness, fullness. Because very often these questions are asked. Why did God create the universe? Why did God create the universe? Does it mean he had some needs? Because normally you do something out of need. You create out of need. Some people say, yes, yes. Ekoham bhusyam. I am one, I am lonely. I need company. And then I create the universe. It's a terrible thing. Just because he should have company, he created us and made us so miserable. There's no explanation of why universe is created. But then, there's no question of creation why. Sometimes we do something without any reason. This person, you invite him to sing in an assembly, he would never sing. Tremendous complex about his voice and about everything, he would never sing. But that person also, when he's taking shower, when nobody is listening, you find him singing loudly. How does that happen? In shower, he feels free. With the warm water, he feels very happy. And the song comes out from him. Not because he's singing, the song emerges from him, understand? If he has to sing, he will never do that. Because it is complex. But song emerges from him. Similarly also, the universe emerges from the Lord. Out of fullness. One explanation is, the universe is the manifestation of the Lord of his fullness. Ishvara is full. Ananda. He is wholeness, completeness, fullness, happiness. That's how our scriptures present Ishvara. Satyam, jnanam, anantam, Brahma. Brahma or Ishvara Satyam of the nature of truth. Jnanam of the nature of knowledge. Anandam of the nature of infiniteness. And when there is infiniteness, there is also ananda, happiness. Happiness and limitlessness go together. Upanishad says, Yo vai bhuma tat sukham nalpe sukhamasti. Yo vai bhuma, that which is boundless, that is infinite, is sukham or happiness. Infinite is happiness. Na alpe sukhamasti, there cannot be happiness in anything that is alpa or limited. This is what our Upanishad said. There cannot be happiness in anything that is limited. Happiness is there where there is limitlessness. Meaning that whenever we feel happy or ecstatic, there are moments when we become ecstatic, when something unusual happens, unexpected happens. We get lost in that moment of happiness. At that time, you become free from all sense of limitation. That's a true happiness when there is no sense of limitation, where there is freedom from all limitation, infiniteness. So Ishvara must be what? Ananda means ananda, infinite means happiness, fullness, wholeness. Satchidananda. Satchidananda rupaya vishvotpatyadehetave, etc. That's how Lord is described. See, this is why I'm talking about all this, bringing Ishvara into our life. We must understand who Ishvara is, then before we can bring him into our life, is it not so? Ishvara is ruler. The one who is not ruled by anything else or anybody else, because he is complete, he is whole, he abides in his fullness, wholeness. Then only there will be no raga and dvesha, no likes and dislikes. Then only you can be ideal ruler. A ruler must be ideally free from likes and dislikes. A leader must be ideally free from likes and dislikes. A manager must be free from likes and dislikes for him or her to manage things properly. Must be impartial. There cannot be anybody like that, but ideally. Who is an ideal leader? One who is non-demanding. One who is impartial. One who has no raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes, attachments and aversions. Otherwise, there is going to be partiality and cruelty. When I have attachment and aversion, when I like somebody, dislike somebody else, there is going to be partiality and cruelty. Is it not so? But Swami used to give us an example. A typical wedding reception in India. In India, the receptions are huge. 1,000 people, 1,500 people, 2,000 people come in the evenings. Here is the bride and the groom. And all these people are their friends and relatives and well-wishers and whatever. So then they appoint somebody at the gate, at the door, to welcome everybody. So job of this person is, he has these roses. Whoever enters, give a rose and sprinkle some rose water on that person. That is his job. Very pleasant job. You understand that all those are coming, they are all friends of the bride and the groom, but not necessarily friends of this fellow who is standing here. Of all these people, there may be somebody, some people whom he likes, There are likely to be people whom he dislikes, and then indifferent also. He may not know many people, but there may be some whom he likes, some who are his good friends, and some who are his enemies also likely to be. So there's an interest. If you have a video camera there, a CCTV, a closed circuit TV camera, very interesting thing to watch. This fellow, he doesn't know that he is being, you know, videoed. Otherwise he'll be conscious. Somebody comes whom he likes, his friend. Hey, how are you? This, you know. Best rose he gives. A lot of sprinkling of the rose water. Because he's friend. And comes somebody whom he hates. He just looks otherwise, so he's not seen him. He fails to even offer him a rose, because he doesn't like him. So when you have those likes and dislikes, you're going to be partial to somebody, those whom you like or you are attached to, and cruel to those whom you dislike. Partiality and cruelty. You know, there are these community feasts in India. The whole community, whole jnati, they were feasts, annual feasts. There are people who serve. In some communities, nowadays that may or may not be the olden days, when you serve some, what they call the churma, halwa, then also you serve ghee in there, you know. So there is somebody who has a whole container of ghee, who pours. And people love that. Some, I don't know, I can't tolerate that ghee or something, but some people do. So when he's serving, automatically there is some place where so much ghee is poured, and he just overlooks somebody else. Why? He likes this fellow, doesn't like that fellow. Becomes very evident from our behavior. Our likes and dislikes control us, they govern us. And therefore, in our behavior there is partiality and cruelty. A ruler cannot afford to have that. Although all rulers have, that's a different matter, because all they are human beings, poor fellows. And that is why we have so many problems. Ideally, a leader must be one who should be free from likes and dislikes. Then only he can be fair to everybody. There must be fairness. A ruler must be necessarily fair. There must be fairness, justice. If Ishvara is not fair, if he is not just, then there cannot be fairness in the universe. There cannot be an order in the universe. There cannot be harmony in the universe. In the family also, in a large extended family, there cannot be harmony if the leader of the family is not impartial. Likes one son, does not like other son, likes one daughter-in-law, doesn't like other one. You know, these things happen in the family. The mother-in-law also likes this and doesn't like that, all that stuff. There cannot be harmony. We do not enjoy harmony only because of these likes and dislikes. We cannot overcome them. But in the universe, there is harmony. There is order. There is fairness. This is important. Not only there is an order in the universe, not only all the elements in the universe all function according to the order of harmony, the sun and the moon, the fire and the earth and the water and the air, the stars and the galaxies, all of them function in a harmonious manner. There are no star wars. The stars are warring with each other. You don't find wars in nature that way. Everything is in harmony. When can there be harmony? When there is fairness. When there is righteousness, when there is dharma. Dharma or righteousness, there must be fairness. When can that be? Only when There is no likes and dislikes, no attachments, no aversion. Very important. Ishvara must necessarily be free from attachments and aversions, likes and dislikes, free from demands, free from needs, free from expectations. Why is it so? Because Ishvara abides in His wholeness, in His completeness, in His limitlessness. And therefore, we find there is an order in the universe. There is harmony in the universe. There is fairness in the universe. There is justice in the universe. Although sometimes we do complain, where is justice, Swami? So I remember one song, film song, that in Ishwara's home, house, there hai, andher nahi hai. That it may take time, justice may take time. But there is no andher, meaning that there is no disorder there. There is an order. So this is Ishvara. The word Ishvara itself reveals so many things, you know. Ishvara means a ruler. Must be all-knowing. Must be all-powerful. Must be fair. Must be rooted in His completeness, wholeness. Must be free from likes and dislikes, must be free from needs, must be free from demands. That's the Ishvara. See, bringing Ishvara into life is like becoming Ishvara, really. Bringing Ishvara into our life is like becoming Ishvara. More Ishvara-like we become, happier we are. Most Ishvara-like we become, happiest we are. So then, what is the ultimate goal of human life? Is to become like Ishvara. By becoming like Ishvara, we do not mean becoming omniscient or omnipotent, but becoming fair like Ishvara is, becoming just like Ishvara is, becoming free from likes and dislikes as Ishvara is. Becoming rooted in wholeness and completeness as Ishvara is. That is possible for us. It is not possible that we can become omniscient, not possible. Become omnipotent, not possible. But as far as the nature of Ishvara is concerned, we can become like Him. That is the purpose of bringing Ishvara into our life. That we become successful people in the true sense of the word. How do you become happy? How do you become successful? How do you become true human beings? For that, the method is, or the teaching is, to bring Ishvara into our lives. We'll continue our discussion tomorrow. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnahat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om.